It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And we are back home. We're back in the studio.
This is our return to the normal podcast.
Yeah, last week we were in the Comedy Con with Zanies with Mike Lawrence, and that was a really fun experiment.
Absolutely
no topic on that.
No,
it was
last
a bit of a mess.
We have no topics.
No, none at all.
But this week we have a topic.
This week we have a topic, and we have the guest to talk about that topic. Please welcome Matt Tate.
Hello.
What you can't hear, Matt, is all the applause of the people who listen. They applaud.
Do they?
Sure.
Do they? You're in the store. People come in and give you feedback.
In my head.
They're like, they all applaud.
When anyone's listening, you better be applauding when we introduce these wonderful new guests.
Or they won't come back.
Or we can't get them to come back.
Well, Matt is a teacher at Stone Grove Guitar, where Kevin Ryan taught, who was on the show. But he also just came back from the NAMM convention in Anaheim.
I did.
And I have never been there. I've been to San Diego Comic Con. I've been to most of the big sci-fi cons. I've never been to a music con.
You must go.
It's called NAMM.
It's called NAMM. What does NAMM stand for?
The National Association of Music Merchants.
Wonderful.
It's an enormous, it's the world's largest trade show.
Oh, wow.
For anything music related. Yeah, so anything you can imagine.
That's wild.
So it's more like Toy Fair than Comic Con.
Yeah.
Where it's basically built around the companies showing what they have.
The entire industry. It's the best and brightest.
Now, how did you go?
The new inventions.
Is it open to the public? Or was...
No. I believe there's a $50 perhaps a day, or maybe it is the weekend that you can go. But I think those are fairly limited. But no, you have to be in the industry or friends with people in a particular industry. It could be owning a guitar store,
sure.
You know, like with Stone Grove. But I went with Bill Banks, who is the... who also teaches at Stone Grove, and he's the founder inventor of the engineer of Overtone amps, which are the amps that I play and endorse. And,
oh, right, yeah.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and we should
but
start...
But he got the passes.
We should start by saying right off the bat, because we've also... Matt's got his Chapman stick with him.
I do, which I also teach.
And we plugged it in. So in case he wants to play it, it'll just happen. And you won't have to freak out.
It's pretty awesome.
It's a pretty amazing instrument. I remember seeing it ads for it in Guitar World in like the late 80s. And
immediately
I was like, I'm never playing one of those. Still trying to learn arpeggios.
For anyone who doesn't know what it is, and it maybe is musically uneducated as I am, it's basically like the shaft end of a guitar. But like wider, it's ridiculous looking.
It's the awesome. Shaft end,
right? It's that
where
round,
all the thrusting
the
power
round,
comes from.
The round bit at the end is missing, and it's basically with the wires.
It's
I mean, it
the
looks
shaft
awesome.
End. You're damn right.
Love even if we steer that away from being dirty. All your terminology of musical instruments would also be applicable to a bowling alley
shaft.
I forget how a chameleon goes. I was gonna get funky. I forget how it goes.
So what was the experience like? Was it a lot of booths of manufacturers that you could just go up to, or
there must have been 1,000 companies showing at NAMM. It was absolutely gigantic. It was staggering. There's over 100,000 people, I believe, that attend each day. And this year, which I believe is the first time in probably at least 20 years or something, if I'm not mistaken, that it coincided with Grammy Week.
Oh,
or
wow.
Grammy weekend.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So it was even crazier.
Yeah.
But the Grammys are usually held in New York, right?
I have no idea. I tend to not watch the Grammys.
I didn't watch the Grammys either.
I have no idea.
I did watch it this year. My girlfriend was watching
I didn't
it.
Watch
My
the Super Bowl this year either.
I watched it, but only because I was working and...
It was on.
Something
was,
to do.
It was on.
Yeah.
I was like, well, it's, you know, keep me from being less bored.
Yeah.
You know. But, so, yeah. So NAMM was absolutely staggering. Like I said, 1,000, 3 floors. The first, well, actually it's 4 floors because the main floor is gigantic. several hundred booths, displayers of anything you can imagine, from classical instruments, any classical, sousaphones, to rock instruments, to jazz, horns, downstairs. An enormous amount of booths.
So it's not just popular music. There's all like, there's classical, there's every type of music.
There's world instruments. There's anything you can imagine is pretty much there. There were didgeridoos.
That's awesome.
Was there a didgeridoo booth?
There was didgeridoos.
A didgeridoo booth?
Didgeridon'ts. No, there was not. That was.
I
should be a didgeridoo.
I was so hoping there was going to be a didgeridooth, and there would be a sign posted there were didgeridon'ts. Do not spit in the didgeridoos.
Right.
Do not talk with an Australian accent while playing the didgeridoo.
My brother's got one of those things.
Do not just walk up and say Australian didgeridoo. Accent?
No.
Oh, a didgeridoo?
That would have been anybody. He's got one of those. Has anyone tried to play one of those? Either of you guys?
Yes, I have one. Yeah. I bought it about 15 years ago, sort of on a whim.
Yeah, I think that's how my brother
it's like,
did
oh,
it.
Oh, this is. There's no reason.
I don't want
just about any white person should own this thing.
I don't know how to make.
Unless there's an albino aborigine or something. Right, perhaps, you know.
I have no idea how to, he manages to make some sound come out of this thing, but I can't. I don't know if it's lung capacity.
It takes
or
a little.
Something.
Well, it's not actually. They use circular breathing for those where you breathe. And I used to do this. It turns out, as a child, as a small child, in I would blow bubbles in milk. You know, I drink milk in a straw, and I would just sit there and blow bubbles for like 10 minutes without ever taking a breath because you breathe in through the nose and you hold it in the air pockets in your mouth.
Yeah.
And like you store the air in your cheeks, and then you somehow close off your nose from your neck, or something like that. You push the air out with your cheeks, as you're breathing in through your nose. So it's a circular thing. So you never have to stop. So horn players, who normally their phrasing is developed around the breath,
right?
How long you can hold your breath?
Yeah, it's just like singing.
Here, it's you go on forever. And didgeridoo doesn't have any notes outside of what you add. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just that drone, and then you add all sorts of animal sounds through
whatever,
it's whatever like, you can it's like do. The crust, you know, it's and like, you do that, and it sounds like an elephant or something.
Sure,
you know?
It's like a kazoo and a bagpipe.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
yeah,
and other things.
And they had a booth.
By crikey!
So, what was the most interesting thing you saw?
Wow, actually, God, there were so many things that just blew me away. The greatest thing that I saw. Was Kemper amplifiers. It's, as far as I know, new. I had never heard of them before until
I've
went.
Never heard of them.
And they're, I guess, about 2 years old. And the sort of the industry standard of the last few years, several years, has been the Axe FX by Fractal.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, they're like the main competitor to Line 6 now, but like higher end than that.
Way higher end. Yeah. Kemper is... I'm told the Axe FX killer.
Really?
They're 2 years ahead of the closest competitor, which is Fractal. They're way beyond that.
And they're a new company?
Yeah, they're a newer company, German.
That's why.
Absolutely and unbelievable. I've never heard sounds
and
come out like this.
What they're doing, Stephen, is they're all digital companies, and what they're trying to do is capture the sound of analog equipment perfectly.
Okay.
So Line 6 is the best example of it. And in fact, I have a Line 6 Pod
HD. Model
yeah, it's sounds. Modeling. So in a way, it's I always liken it to taking a picture of a sound.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like you having a pile of JPEGs. It's like a digital camera, but for sound.
Yeah,
that's a good way of putting it. Taking a picture of a sound. That's
modeling. So you plug in your guitar to basically like just a PC. It's a digital piece. But you can pull up a Fender amplifier or a Marshall amplifier or a Vox amplifier, and then you can put different effects in it. But you're not actually getting any of that equipment. It's all just – they're all programs that are built in. And over the last – Line 6 came out around probably the millennium was the first time I heard of them. First time I saw the Pod.
Late 90s.
Yeah, late 90s, early 2000s. And they've just been getting better and better as processing power has been getting. And there's been this arms race in the digital field because everybody wants to be – the company that makes basically the iPhone of guitar amplifiers.
Kemper has just done that. Because
really?
if you look at modeling as taking a picture of a sound, what the Kemper does, it doesn't model, it profiles. So what you do, you can plug your any amp, any sound, whether it's a combo amp, a Fender, a Roland JC-120, any effects processor, anything you can plug into this thing, it profiles the instrument. So, and I've heard it described as, rather than taking a picture of a sound, it's like taking the soul of the amplifier and retrieving it. It's like, what's the spirit?
Now I'm scared.
It's unbelievable. You plug it in and it becomes the sound and it makes it better.
That's so it's wild.
Makes it better.
So it's almost, now I haven't heard it, but it sounds like it's almost like going from a digital camera to a 3D printer.
And yeah. Yeah. I would put it on par with that. That's what it seems like to me.
And you were able to play one?
They pulled me up on stage about 4 times. I went there with my Chapman stick just to sit in the booth.
And played the Chapman stick?
And
too?
Yeah, I was just playing with the headphones on. And then, wow, a Chapman stick player. Would you like to come up on stage and play?
Because, that Chapman stick gives you cachet. See,
it does.
You walk around with that thing because it's so intimidating.
Yeah.
That if somebody's going to walk around with one, they go, oh, they know how to do this. Mm-hmm. You may have been the first Chapman stick to ever plug into one of these campers.
I, as far as I know, I was.
Wow. That's
far as awesome. I know. And, you know, they really dug me. They had me come up on stage several more times through my weekend at NAMM.
That's awesome.
Got to play it over and over again.
And you felt it totally captured the sound of an amp?
It did.
Really?
It did. And you can look up YouTube videos of them, and it'll show you how they do it. It sends a signal. You plug it in through the sends and returns, you plug it into an amplifier and it sends a signal into that and then retrieves the soul of this amp. What makes the amp that amp?
It's ridiculous.
It's insane. It's insane.
Yeah.
I don't even know how else to describe it because
I feel like South American natives when they first took pictures of it.
Well, that's
you have stolen the soul of my amplifier. Now I've got a whole room full of zombie amplifiers.
That's what it is. That's what it is, except it's not zombies. They're alive. But, and you know, and I'm
and it's,
technically speaking, I can play technically, you know, quite well, but describing technology, I'm not a gearhead. So
no,
describing technology and things like that, that's not my strong suit. However, but
so there'll be a lot of capturing souls on the show. And putting them in my bag.
I'm gonna totally put it in my bag.
Now, I haven't seen the Kemper at all. This is the first time I've heard of that. Is it like a pedal board or is it a rack system?
No, they have a 3-space rack that's mm-hmm. I don't know, might be eight inches deep, maybe even 10.
So like that's the size of like pounds. A Blu-ray player, kind of. I'm pointing to a Blu-ray player and Matt had to
it's
turn
about
around.
Well, I didn't know
because he's never seen one.
I didn't know if you had one that was 3 rack spaces high.
That's true. No, I don't.
It was not that tall actually.
It's about that depth.
It was a bit slimmer.
Well, in its younger days.
And I'm not in my younger days. I'm still slimmer, but. That was just one of the things that blew my mind. Strandberg Guitars was another one.
What are they doing?
I see. This is another thing. I don't even know how to describe it. You just have to. It's one of those things you have to see.
No,
because it's a completely different guitar shape. They're sort of reinventing the guitar. It's a totally different body shape. It's an entirely different neck profile. The back of the neck, it's not beveled like a normal guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It has these sort of bizarre angles that rather than go sort of straight through where the truss rod would go through the center of the neck.
Okay.
As I'm miming the truss rod on my arm.
The shaft, Steve would call it.
I couldn't remember the name of the damn
You're
thing.
You're damn right.
Shaft.
So it actually goes on an angle lower to high, almost to the opposite end of the neck. And the thumb just naturally follows this. And it's the most ergonomic, apparently, design that has ever been invented for guitar.
So beyond something like the Parker Fly, which was
the greatest guitar I'd ever played, the $8,000 Adrian Blue model.
Wow.
That was the best guitar I'd ever played. Until this, and this thing just blew it out of the water, and it's $5,000 less.
Wow.
So it's a $3,000 guitar.
$3,500.
Wow.
My math's a little off. Fuzzy math. Fuzzy math.
It's expensive. So
it's out of my price.
We go to like comic conventions or like John seems to be the sci-fi conventions or whatever, and you walk around and you're going to all these different booths, and at these shows it's just like who's got what back issue.
Mm-hmm.
At music, since you said all these different vendors are all selling instruments, like,
yeah,
if you're going to buy an instrument, you got to test it out. So is it just like constant
you get to test them.
Music being played everywhere? Or is it all like, here's a guitar, but here, take these headphones so you're the only one who can hear
it? Yeah, that's a good question. How do you control...
Both.
It's both.
The ambient noise.
Both. I was going to say, because I was just thinking, like, the ambient noise, you said there's like 400 different instruments or whatever being played. They're all different. It's like, it would just be like chaotic.
Including drum sets and cymbals.
Yeah, and you think...
These aren't quiet instruments. And in a big space, like I'm sure this is, that's acoustics, right? Like,
yeah.
That's like...
Yeah,
you think about any convention center, you think about McCormick Place here, just the amount of people talking.
Yeah, you hear the... It's constant.
Yeah, there's just rumble
exhausting.
Going on. Yeah.
And
you
get
all
this
sensory overload.
Yeah.
You get.
Yeah. Oh my goodness! Yeah, and there's just the sound refracting off every surface inside there, and there's nothing to really dampen the sound outside of the human bodies in there, but it doesn't do a very good job,
right?
Unfortunately,
it's pretty intense.
It's pretty intense, but they do have sound police walking around with, you know, their sound meters and checking for the exact decibels and you know.
And then arresting you and taking your soul and putting it in a bag.
You're going to be in trouble.
I'll take the soul of your voice and put it in the Kemper. You'll have no soul.
I don't know if they're that advanced.
There's something Ghostbusters about this Kemper machine.
Oh, it's completely. Well, wait till you see it in action. The greatest sounds that I've ever heard come out of anything in my life.
Wow.
It was absolutely amazing.
And it's totally responsive to the touch. And
yes, they have.
Because the two problems I've had with digital modeling equipment is the dynamics of, you know, playing harder or softer on the strings with a tube amplifier, because it's all vibrating.
Right.
It'll give you different sounds. But with digital, it's all kind of just taking it the same. Mm-hmm. That and distortion, because distortion, this is the biggest problem for digital technology for me, is that when they're modeling analog equipment, most of the sounds that have come out of guitar analog equipment is abusing that equipment, you know, sending it into overdrive. And what it's trying to do is mimic the sound of something being pushed beyond its parameters in a totally different way. Because if you push digital that hard, it just breaks up.
Yeah.
It becomes like...
It's ugly.
You know, you can hear pixels. Like if you hear a really crappy MP3.
Yeah.
Like you can almost hear those pixels in the high end. So it's trying to do something that... That analog wasn't even designed to do,
right?
Much less digital. But you're so you're saying
usually analog sounds good if it breaks up a lot of the
time. Analog
digital
sounds a little
does
better.
Not sound good. Yeah.
No,
it sounds
so,
pixelated.
And this technology is digital technology.
It's digital
it
technology
is.
That's mimicking,
and it's not modeling; it's profiling.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it's sort of like stealing the soul.
Yeah,
because
it's not copying it like a
device.
Model you'd expect. It's like it's taking on the attributes of
it. Yeah.
And
so it has like
it's
a natural breakup.
That,
did you?
Yeah.
Because I mostly heard you play the Chapman stick fairly clean. Did you Did you get dirt out of it? Did you get distortion out of it?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, I did. Yes, it's. I don't even have words for it.
And it's,
so I'm in touch with
them
now. So
listening and or using that, and not using it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
My problem with all
it's
this
gigantic.
Stuff, it's the same thing. When this is why I don't go and like. Like we were talking about that like haircut thing where it's just like you get a fancy haircut where they do like the shave or the hot water or whatever. It's like that's a luxury, right? So it's like the same thing with this technology. I'd be like, I wouldn't want to hear it because it's like not everything's going to be produced with this quality. And you know what I mean?
It'll make everything else sound like crap.
It'll make everything else sound like shit.
Right.
I think that's the problem.
And once you hear it, you kind of can't go back. You can't unhear something.
That's what I'm saying. Like you said, it's like you're a trained musician. Like you're used to hearing beautiful and making beautiful sounds. And then you hear this and it's like, oh, hey, by the way, now you can't have this.
Until now, mercifully, I haven't been... Well, yes, I'm a trained musician, self-trained anyways, but I'm not... I always wanted to be a gearhead. You know what I mean? A tone freak. And I'm not. I never have been, but I really, really, really wish I was. And now I think I'm going to have to be because, they want to send me a loaner to film to record some demos.
Oh, wow.
You know, $2,800 loaner. Thank you, guys.
These things are probably super expensive. Like this
equipment. About $28,000,
yeah.
And I play Chapman stick, which is a stereo pickup, so I run bass strings and guitar strings. It's a 12-stringed instrument. Basically,
play,
an orchestra on a 2x4.
Yeah, because the times I've seen you play,
that's awesome.
Well, you're playing two amps, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So usually I run just bass amps, but you know, with these profilers, the problem with playing a stereo instrument like this is that you kind of want or need two of everything. So hopefully I can get a buy one, get one free.
Yeah.
We'll see. This one Fingers is great. Crossed. Where's the other one?
Right. I will film demo videos for you guys for years.
Just let me know what I need.
So, well, that's they're going to send me a loaner, hopefully. So it looks like it. So I'm just filming some demos so you'll be able to see it.
Yes.
I'll make sure you
I think you should bring those into this room and we will record them on a podcast.
Because
right now we have the Chapman stick running through.
Do you hear the beard scratching?
Yeah. Let's all scratch our beards.
I don't have much.
No, you shave.
Well, yours should be louder, actually. Almost.
No, yours is nothing. The loudest.
It is the loudest. Is it? Should be.
I can't hear it. I'll take your word for it.
It sounds amazing.
Because yours is the scratchiest.
Yes.
Indeed. Where's this conversation going?
I have no idea. The last few shows have just gone completely off the rails.
This is what happens when I'm in any conversation. I'm sort of like the
beard scratcher.
Well, yes and no, but I'm like the continuity grenade. I blow it all
this
to
show,
shit.
This show is
profanity okay on this?
Yes.
Yeah, I just blow it all to shit.
It has an explicit tag.
Is it encouraged?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what the problem with is when we did the first show, Joe was on, and I don't think we were, I don't think there's probably maybe one or two swears in it. Mm-hmm. And then we had Dave Gonzalez on, and then he just like, he swears around his kid. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. He just lets him
he
fly.
He lets
fly.
The doors
and
off.
Then
you
like,
picked it up.
Yeah. The floodgates opened.
And you couldn't stop dropping F-bombs for months.
Yeah. I think it was just like.
And then it was just like, there's no reason to ever take the explicit tag off.
Yeah. Once I get rolling, it's like a drunk Scotsman.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Turned him back to hit the pedal, you know? Yeah.
Again, it's
a. Who's also a sailor and a pirate at the same time.
Yeah.
Again, it's like the Kemper. Once you've heard the F-bombs on the show, you can't go back. It's a Cesar Romero mustache.
Once you see
Cesar Romero's mustache under the Joker makeup on the Adam West Batman show, you can never unsee it.
Did you guys have a booth there, or did you just go and
just walk around?
Are you then going to like get like equipment and stuff? Are you guys buying merchandise?
Well, that's usually why many people go is. It's like distributors, things like that. You know, we'll take 10,000 of this and we're going to distribute that throughout Europe, through Asia or, you know, whatever it is.
Trade shows are usually just set up for distribution.
Yeah. But there's also a lot of artists, professional musicians, famous musicians who are doing demos of various gear, you know, and the usually the better the gear or the more name brand. The more popular the gear is, the bigger the name of the person playing it.
Right, because they can
afford. To a point. Because, you know, the best musicians in the world tend not to be playing Fender or Gibson or ESP or whatever. There are some. Absolutely.
And those guys usually get signature
Albert Lee
models.
Was there. Albert Lee was there. I saw him walking around.
Plays Music Man.
He's one of the best guitar players on earth, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That guy's a freak of nature. You know.
Yeah.
But then you've guys like Victor Wooten or Doug Wimbish, the bass player of Living Color. You know, two of the just sickest bassists walking the planet. You know, Billy Sheehan's walking around. Stevie Wonder's walking around, for crying out loud.
Really?
I didn't see him. I don't think he saw me either.
I was gonna say.
Incidentally, I don't think he was walking around by himself.
Probably not. He's a handler.
Yeah.
He's just I'm just going to go find some people.
Yeah, because I think a lot of it.
My name's Stevie. Who did I bump into?
So expensive. It's like, you guys, you know, it's like, hey, if we're going to order this, like, let's get an idea of what it.
Yeah, you're not walking around with your bag.
Right, yeah.
Right. And, you know, when you artists or musicians, you know, will go there and buy things, and you don't take it home with you right there.
Yeah,
you know, they'll ship
purchased and they ship, you know. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So, you know, upstairs, second and third floor, it's tends to be reserved to people just like Fender or ESP or whatever, like the big companies are all upstairs.
Yeah.
Fortunately, they're the most boring things to look at outside of the ESP custom shop, ESP guitars. Their custom shop is unbelievable. They don't have anything I would ever buy, but the sculpting that goes on, the woodworking that goes on with these things is staggering. I have a picture I can show you, but that's not going to do the podcast listeners any good.
We can put it on the Facebook page.
Ooh.
Ah, there we go.
See, we're
there
thinking we about things.
Technology.
I know.
I don't know anything about this technology of which you speak.
Well, you're speaking into a microphone and it's recording.
Ooh. Ooh. and distorting.
Now what? But now what trends?
Continuity grenade.
What trends have you seen? Because just reading magazines and just, you know, being in shops like Stone Grove, there's been this huge boutique like pedal manufacturer wave where every couple of guys are, you know, they're making effects pedals and just selling these fuzz pedals out, and that seems to have been proliferated over the last 5 years. Was there a ton of that there?
I think the pedal. Sort of what's going on with effects pedals is sort of akin to what's happening with microbrews.
It's almost a good analogy.
It's exploded. Yeah. And it's every year it's growing exponentially. It's just multiplying itself.
So, and it's weird because it is.
There's so many great pedals out
there. There's great pedals, but I've kind of hit saturation point where I'm like, yeah, but it's really the same basic six effects. And the same way with microbrew, you're still making an IPA or a stout. Or a lager, you know. They're all variations on that.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're not seeing
that. They all have things that are just certain characteristics that are just unique to that. And, you know, for the layman, for the average listener, you're not going to notice the difference. I wouldn't notice that much of the difference most of the time.
Right.
You know, as a musician who gigs all the time, you know. But, you know, to people who do have an ear for that, there is something very noticeable. And, you know, they're able to coax things out of it that the average person just simply cannot.
Yeah.
And just
even
the way.
Even something with three knobs.
Yeah. And just the way someone builds a circuit, just the way someone solders a couple of transistors in is totally different than the way somebody else. I mean, you look at something as simple as distortion pedals. I'm not a huge pedal guy, but I have probably four or five different distortion pedals, like a Big Muff. I have like a Boss Heavy Metal and. I have a Boost, and they're all completely different. Tube Screamer, but they're all basically electrically they're all the same thing. Basically, all the distortion pedal is doing is clipping the signal and kind of chopping it up a bit as it goes through, and that's what's giving you that fuzz out. But no two sound alike.
Right, I have three different ones: the Big Muff, the Boss Octave pedal. Which actually has a fantastic distortion if you plug in through the guitar.
Yeah, I actually use
it. It sounds amazing. I use that on the Chapman stick all the time. It's incredible. And then I have a Barber Dirty Bomb.
My favorite octave pedal is the Whammy pedal. I use that for all my octaves and all my harmonies all the time. Yeah. I rarely do the sweeps that like Tom Morello.
I've got the Whammy Wah.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah, those are cool.
Wait till you hear the Kemper Profiler.
Well, I imagine it does all effects as well.
This thing is a dream come true. So you might need to get one of these, because you get this thing, this is all you need. You don't need speakers anymore. You just, you know, just run it into the PA,
right?
You know, it is nice having speaker cabinets too, because you can, you know, if the sound guy doesn't favor you or is just a dick, for lack of a better term, you know, you still have the power on stage to control the volume. Like, well, if your signal's running through the PA, you're at the mercy of them.
Yeah, my only problem with the running through the PA, and I've been in bands...
But you can have your rig in a suitcase.
Yeah. I've been in bands where we've all run into the PA, and I've been in bands where we had our own amps on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the important thing is just having my own speaker.
Yeah.
So if it's in it the PA, just let me have my own monitor, so if I want to hear myself, I can walk to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I want to hear the mix, I can walk away. Like when it's all pre-mixed in the PA, I feel lost.
Yeah.
But it's true. I'm getting older, and as much as I love the Marshall stacks, I don't want to put them in the car and then take them out of the car and then wheel them into a bar and then take it out.
Yeah. Even nobody wants to lug it around. You know, in the 80s and early 90s, it was stacks.
Well, people wanted walls.
Marshalls.
Yeah.
And that was all about dick waving.
And even now, people still, you know, bands, whether it's Slayer or whoever, they still have the walls of Marshalls, but there's only one or two cabinets that they're using, and the rest of them, the entire wall, is empties.
Yeah, it's stage dressing.
Yeah, it's just stage
dressing. There was a picture on Facebook that showed.
Because the expensive shipping, I mean, gas is not getting any cheaper.
That's a very good point.
And you had four 12-inch speakers with their heavy-ass magnets.
It's all heavy, yeah.
It's just adding more weight, which is eating more gas.
And you've helped us move gear after a show. Yeah. They are not light.
It's not a dream come true.
It's not fun. Yeah.
So that, actually, you were talking about some of the trends in the industry, and that's been one of the trends over the last 10 years, maybe even 15 years, is the shrinking rig, you know, that it becomes more portable. I mean, you see musicians now running their rigs out of their laptops.
Right.
And they just go right into the to the system, and they've got a pedal board, and that's it. That's everything.
Yeah, that's,
their,
that's wild.
Yeah, I envy that. And as a Chapman stick player too, the rub about this is that you need two of everything.
Right.
You know, because I can split the signal, so I prefer to split the signal. So I have that stereo separation, you know, and oh, well, there's a 412 cabin or a 212 or a 210 bass cab and a 410 bass cab. I'm like, oh, damn it. Do I seriously have to carry all this around? Which is why I like the overtone amplifier stuff engineered by Mr. Bill Banks so much, because I have a 500 watt bass head. It weighs 4 pounds.
Really?
I have another 500 watt bass head, also 4 pounds. So it's and it's a single rack space.
So you carry one in each hand.
Yeah.
So I've got a 2-space rack, and it my whole rig is right there.
Yeah, I remember.
So I can use that in a pedal board.
In the late '80s, everybody was going to rack systems,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, back then it was still analog. I mean, it was transistor instead of tube based. Mm-hmm. But
I had the what is it? The ADA MP1.
Yep.
I had one of those.
And the first digital Digitech. Stuff where it just had that DOS screen with yep. it had the title of what you were doing dot, and you just dot, kept dot, scrolling dot. This knob, the infinity knob.
Yep.
That went on for I remember my bass player bought one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so excited in the early 90s because we were doing a tape of Beatle parodies, and he was able to get a sitar sound out.
Oh, nice.
Of the bass, so we could do Norwegian Wood. Do a bit of
judge.
Yeah. We did Norwegian Wood on it. And it would, you listen to it now, it sounds nothing like a sitar, but it sounds like something.
Yeah.
Right. Sounds like something.
Yeah, but.
We'll leave it at that.
We're still at the point now where it's like digital's getting closer and closer and closer and closer. But you're saying the Kemper's done it. Because I've been saying for the last couple of years, we're not
at least the new standard.
Yeah.
So I, in my opinion, but again, you know, I'm not the most. I'm technologically inept. I mean, just to be fair, but I've heard a million amazing tones. You know, I can't dial them in necessarily, but I've heard a million amazing tones. I work with Paul Cicerelli, who owns Stone Grove Forever, right. who's a tone savant, I think, to a degree.
And Max over there is a tone savant. Very simple gear too.
Yeah,
it's and like it tellies sounds and fenders
amazing.
And, yep,
his tone is just absolutely staggering to me. You know, and I envy that, but I'm too lazy to actually go about and figure out how to do this stuff now. But now with this Kemper profiler, it's actually stimulated me enough where I think I can do that.
Yeah.
You know, like whereas 17 years ago, I got a Digitech 2101, which is an amazing effects processor. Mm-hmm. And I would spend hours every day, you know, dialing things in, but I've never done it since, you know, yeah, that was it. That was the first, that was the last time. And now this thing is like, oh my god!
Yeah, I have a pod.
I'll spend months dialing this sucker in.
That's wild.
I have a pod HD400 downstairs. I almost never use it, but I use it for traveling.
It's convenient.
Yeah, well, I'm playing some gigs in Puerto Rico at the end of the month, and whenever we get down there, we just use whatever. So I'm using, you know, solid state PV backstage pluses,
right?
Like whatever was lying around. So it's like, well, with this, I can
at least, because freight shipping
your
gear.
Yeah, I'm not going to take an amp.
It's not cost effective.
I'm taking one guitar and I'm taking my Music Man Access, which is the most modern guitar, because I know when I go from a Chicago winter to Puerto Rico,
yes,
that temperature swing is going to curl up my neck like a spoon.
Yeah. Well, you also have to detune the strings, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, detune the strings, but it's still, by the second day, it just completely bows, but it has the truss rod gear right out front. So instead of trying to get in there manage, I can just, and it'll go right back in its
own. The thing I like about the Chapman stick is it has the one adjustable truss rod running down the center of the neck, but there's two supportive truss rods on either side of it.
Oh, interesting.
So this thing doesn't bend.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the altitude is.
Have you ever had to adjust it at all? Or the truss rods have kind of kept it in?
Yeah, it stays for the most part, but, you know, with heat, humidity, cold, barometric pressure, you know, whatever, you know, just subtle adjustments.
Yeah, and as we're talking now, it's 1 degree outside. So just going from outside to inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
And NAMM was 77 every day. excuse me.
God damn you.
Where was it again?
Anaheim.
See.
The Anaheim Convention
Center. Down by where Disney World
was. Right by Disneyland. Disneyland.
Disney World is in Florida.
Knott's Berry Farm, Giant Stadium. Yeah. It's all down there. The Anaheim Ducks. The Blackhawks just kicked their ass yesterday. That was outstanding.
Yeah.
77 degrees, though. Ugh.
Yeah,
right now, it just hurts, awesome. Doesn't it?
It hurts. It hurts. My bones. In my bones.
You did look. You looked so miserable when I opened the door.
Because it's miserable outside.
You were just like.
I was in a terrible environment.
You just look sad. You look like every.
That's my defeated look, John. That's how I look when the weather has defeated me. It's no defeated. Longer a fight. Yeah. I lost.
This is how we look every single day. Just waking up. Oh, shit. It's still February.
Yeah.
Oh, it's January.
This morning I was
It's cold.
This morning I was scraping the ice off the car again. And I thought, oh, now I understand Jack London novels.
Yes. I've been doing that on the inside of my car on the windows.
Yes! Yeah,
I heard.
I've gotten frost on the inside of my windshield almost every day.
That's
which is awesome because the ice scrapers aren't meant to scrape the inside of the window. It's concave.
It just doesn't work. You can draw lines on it.
Yeah.
You can write a letter about how much you hate the winter on the inside of your windshield. What I do is just like try to I now drive with the defroster up full blast the whole time. I don't care if I ever warm up.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's
I prefer warming
up. It'd be nice.
There are days.
I have a preference.
I just have my hat and my gloves on. And, like, it's like a tank sometimes. You just get this slit that you can see out of. And you're like, we're driving.
Right.
Because I cannot sit in this car in a parking spot for another minute longer. It is horrible here. Don't come here for at least
there's no reason
2 months.
It's at least 2 more months.
I've had, like, people visit.
Well, who knows? I mean, you know, the way this winter is going, there's. What, I think the last time we've had 60 inches of snow in a winter season was the 70s.
Yeah, so
late 70s. We're at 60 inches.
It may not be.
This time last year
was
10 inches. However, at the same time, I try not to whine about it, although it's completely impossible. These are the winters that Chicagoans brag about. Oh, you think your winter's bad? Yeah. Well, we just had 60. Oh, you fucking.
Right.
Come on, Sally.
Those are the conversations that keep me from assimilating.
Yeah,
after 4 years, I just go, "What are you talking about? I don't belong here."
Yeah,
it's awful.
It's
I had to dig my car out this morning. I've never had to do that. I parked on the city street, and I had to get a shovel out of my. I stole.
Have
a
you
shovel.
Lived here for your whole life?
I've been in the suburbs. I just moved to the city last year. So
you've had driveways.
Yeah, I'm used to like shoveling a driveway or having a snowblower. Now it's like my car's buried because the plow went by.
And then you dig it out and some asshole puts a chair in there.
Right.
Yeah, that's a big thing, the chair in the parking spot.
Yeah, you know, the chair in the parking spot, it's...
That's good for a day or two.
Yeah.
After that, once everybody else digs their car out,
you gotta kind of
you're going to get keyed.
Yeah.
I've seen not a lot of people in my neighborhood are doing it, but by Midway, I think it's more of like a south side thing. Or it's like,
oh, no, that's everywhere.
Is it? Because I don't see it too
I've lived all over the city.
And it's... But it's just like, I know enough to not...
That's Uptown, Humboldt Park, River West, River North, that's...
Just let it be.
Ukrainian Village, Wicker Park, Logan Square, I've seen it everywhere.
I've been seeing a lot of BuzzFeed lists about chairs and parking spots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not to be
messed
with. Anaheim must have been nice.
Anaheim was nice. It was... I wouldn't want to live there, because I think I might have to, you know, I would be famous real fast if I had to spend more than like a week or two. I would become famous.
For, not for playing the Chapman Stick.
Not for good reasons. Look at this. He set fire to the entire town and everyone in it. This is amazing.
Infamous. Isn't that what infamous
is? I just watched, negative famous? That's what J. Jonah Jameson says about Spider-Man. Yeah.
It's Spider-Man 1. I'll make him infamous.
He doesn't want to be famous. I'll make him infamous.
That's a little Three Amigos right there. Oh, he's infamous.
Yeah. It's a strange word.
It's a strange movie.
The Three Amigos.
Burning Bush?
Three Amigos.
Spider-Man. Yeah.
No, Spider-Man's a decent
You
movie.
Shot the invisible swordsman!
I don't think
you're
I've
supposed
seen
to fire
you
up.
You seen that?
You haven't seen The Three Amigos?
It's
I don't
not,
think so.
It's not, it's not great, but it's interesting.
But it's great.
Yeah. It's great for...
It's not great, but it's great.
On great reasons.
You need to see
it. Yeah, I was a
Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, and Martin Short.
Martin Short all in a movie together. And with a cameo from Phil Hartman and John Lovitz in the beginning.
Would you say I had a plethora, Jaime? Oh, yeah, you definitely have a plethora, El Guapo.
Yeah, the villain's name is Jaime. El Guapo.
No, that's the guy's name. That's his name, the bandit,
Guapo.
The bandito.
Yeah,
El Guapo.
El Guapo.
El
it's
Guapo.
So much fun. Try saying it.
El Guapo.
See, how much fun did you
but
have?
But the G is silent. El Guapo.
Guapo.
Orale, El Guapo. That's, you definitely have a plethora.
I wonder if we're ever getting back to the topic.
So, yes. So, what?
Well, yeah, but so, you got out of the Chicago winter, which is horrifying. for people.
We did, and with NAMM,
yes,
music gear is getting smaller. So now what I'm curious about is with Comic Collections and Comic-Con, and yeah. I imagine they're getting bigger, unless they're all digital on iPads or anything. How does that work? What are the parallels?
There's a huge march of digital going on right now. There's an app on the iPad. The iPad really broke it open wide. And I got to, before that there were DVD-ROMs, and I got really into that, and that's when I sold off my comic collection the first time. Was Marvel? I know we've had this conversation.
Yeah, it's something people.
I was living in a much smaller apartment, and Marvel put out.
Marvel. John was like a goldfish in a little bowl. Now he's in a bigger bowl, so he's gonna grow to his surroundings.
So I'm putting in a castle and a guy with a diving helmet and the bubbles and the treasure chest.
Once the thaw comes, we're digging a moat. Yeah. You fill it with crocodiles and sharks. I don't know. Like, I'm in Tom Baker voice.
I guess
again.
Like the digital is everyone loses their mind about digital comics. Like,
well, they have to look gorgeous too.
Well, on the iPad they look great.
The reproduction.
Before that, there was a company called GIT, and I loved them. Was
Guitar Institute of Technology?
Yes, no, it was. They ran out of guitar strings and started reading Spider-Man.
Making comic books.
But it's an LA school. It's
They were selling DVD-ROMs, and it was a DVD. It was one DVD with Amazing Spider-Man 1 to 500, and all as PDFs, because the PDFs are like 10 megs each.
Yeah.
So I was buying those, and then I was just dragging them over, and I was like, well, I don't need this.
Well, how are you going to send your kid to college with a PDF?
You
cannot send your kid to college with back issues anymore.
No.
Well, yes, if you have. You gotta have to
be
like
certain ones,
Spider-Man number one.
It seems like that died down for a while. I remember the 80s and early 90s, there were people buying up everything under the sun.
And that was the problem, was the demand.
Like Beanie Babies.
Crashed. Yeah, it's just like Beanie Babies, no one gives a shit.
The supply outweighed the demand, and the whole thing just crashed. But
almost brought the whole
industry
down.
But I will say that the comic industry has been going in almost in two directions at once, where there's been this digital, which they found is a completely different audience. Mm-hmm. It's not people going into Steven's store going, you know what, screw it, I'm going to get it digital. It's not that, which is what happened at Virgin Records. It's people that weren't going into comic stores going, oh yeah, I like the Avengers movie. Oh, 99 cents? I'll download that and read Avengers.
Yeah, and everyone loses their mind about it, but basically it's like, did digital, it's like, well, did the invention of elevators hurt stairs? No, people still use stairs and people use elevators.
They just don't use 99 floors of stairs, generally.
Exactly, and it's the same thing.
Well,
TV
didn't kill radio.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know? Well, that was the invention of the skyscraper, actually, resulted because of the invention of the elevator.
They could just keep going up.
The Columbian Exposition in Chicago was the debut of the elevator.
Oh, no shit.
And the Ferris wheel, yeah.
Wow, I didn't know.
Oh, look at what other fascinating facts.
Yeah, I know.
There's tons. There's so much in there.
Let's change the topic to this.
I'm the continuity grenade.
This is great. But to answer your question about comics, the way the pendulum has swung the other way at the same time is in hardcover graphic novels.
Yes.
Collecting old issues.
Watchmen.
And putting them up. Yeah, and Barnes & Noble.
And the quality of
the print job is much better. I mean, look at some of these we have there. Some of these have
beautiful.
30, 40 issues in one book.
Walking Dead.
Yep.
Read the first two compendiums there.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
It's good.
Oh,
it's slowing down now.
I'm freaking out. I haven't read anything after, so.
I would say with these bigger hardcovers, it's like some of these reproductions are probably better than what was initially produced like in the 60s.
Yeah, because they were printed on crappy paper back then.
Right. You know, now it's on quality paper. The technology's advanced so much so that like the coloring, you know, doesn't get muted down. Like,
but they're also finding with the big graphic novels is that Barnes & Noble just announced last week that they're dropping
comics.
They're dropping comics. But
they
still have a whole aisle full of graphic novels because that's what they can sell.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So they don't keep.
So they're not getting rid of those.
Yeah, they can't sell you Batman for $2.99 every month, but they can sell you.
I see.
They can sell you 6 months of Batman for $20.
That might actually be really, really good for independent comic shops. Maybe people who want their monthly fix.
It's kind of the only game in town.
I hope.
Because Amazon's doing the same thing. You can get great deals on graphic novels from Amazon.
Right.
But nobody's selling the monthly comics than comic stores.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
Newsstand stopped doing it years ago.
Yep.
Yeah, Jewel and
Dominic's. Also because there's so many to keep up with.
Yeah.
There's so many comics. This is interesting. You know, we're talking about the comparing NAMM to Comic-Con, music to comics, graphic novels. It sort of seems like the digital to analog, you know, if you will, is like The analogous, the analog. Digital to analogous.
Oh, there you go.
If we go
and
with...
And he has puns.
Oh,
I want to start another podcast now with just Matt Cole, digital to analogous.
Let's call it Puncast.
We'll just talk about vinyl and MP3s.
Well, digital analogous, let's go, you know, it's sort of like digital, the readers or the e-readers or whatever you call
right,
them.
Right, yeah,
iPads,
the Kindles,
you know,
and the
right,
iPads.
Right, with the people who like to sit and open the actual, hold the physical comic book.
Yeah.
In their hand,
right.
You know, that's like, you know, people who buy MP3s or steal them by the millions.
Yeah.
And then people who like CDs or particularly vinyl, you know,
yeah,
it seems to be,
yeah,
it
we
sounds
were,
like a similar thing.
We were,
yeah, it sounds like the same thing. 'Cause there's some people who like, yeah, I mean, in the 60s and earlier, you know, vinyl was printed on garbage for the
right.
most part. Some
right.
of, you know, you see
vinyl
most of them now and they're all, they look like a waffle or something, like, you know, they're just,
they're all beat up. Yeah,
I remember I used to have a
they all look water damaged.
I had a record player under
but
my
there's something
window.
The sound is amazing.
I mean, I had the Best of the Monkees on my record player under my window, and
I
came
I
home
that.
And it was totally
oh yeah.
So
I do have
that's
that.
A good example. I think is that like you said, everyone's going back and buying vinyl, and like it's like everyone
on
my block has
vinyl's
like a
exploding again.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because it's like it's coming back.
There's
yeah,
something that's
getting
just
into
so intimate.
Tube amplifiers.
Yeah. Well, there's something intimate and special about vinyl, about even a CD, even
yeah.
though the, you know, the sound is different. But I want to read the liner notes. I want to hold a physical mm-hmm. copy in my hand while I'm listening to the record.
Right.
I want to see who the producer was, who the engineers, what the lyrics are, if there are any. Most
yeah.
of the music I listen to is instrumental anyways, or, you know, doesn't have a lyric sheet. But, you know, I want to look at the artwork. That's
yeah.
that's what's special to me about music. Because that's when I got into music, that's what I did when I was 10, 11 years old, hearing Iron Maiden for the first time, or the first tape I ever bought was Crazy from the Heap by David Lee Roth, you know. And then the first CD I bought was Coroner, Punishment for Decadence. That was 89 or something like that when I first got a CD player. I knew I was getting one for Christmas, so I bought it 2 months early because
That's
I couldn't
awesome.
Contain
That's
myself.
Awesome.
And I read it every day, even though I couldn't listen to it. I had the tape.
But you're like,
but,
I'm going to be so ready for these lyrics.
Oh, my God. I'm going to
know
everything.
You know what? There is something about anticipation that is lost today.
Yeah. But if you look at everything so immediate.
As much as I love technology, and I feel like technology is the one thing humanity can say has advanced and gotten better. You know,
mm-hmm.
human nature, we're still killing each other.
We're still cavemen, yeah.
Yeah.
But we're killing each other with greater technology very often,
yeah.
too.
Right. And yay for yeah. that.
Oh, look at what is drones. Oh, goodbye, wedding party of 50.
Right.
Yep. And
you won't be missed in Washington, D.C.
But I'll get my Amazon package in half an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do miss, like, some of my best memories of music are buying vinyl. And I went right from vinyl until I couldn't buy vinyl anymore to CDs.
Yeah, I went to, well, I was at tapes.
And I didn't
but
have.
But I inherited my parents'
I never bought tapes. I always bought blank tapes. I would buy
right,
one blank tape
them.
With it, the same way about like bags and boards with comics.
Yeah.
Because then I used to collect vinyl to the point where nobody had vinyl anymore. So when I had an album and somebody wanted to borrow it,
mm-hmm.
I would say, I'll tape it for you.
Yeah.
And then I've given them
yeah.
something forever, and they didn't take my freaking album and
yes.
lose it on me. Right?
Oh, man.
But there
the
was
amount
this,
of goddamn CDs
there was
that
this,
I lose.
There was this feeling of I didn't have a driver's license until I was like 25 years old. Because I always lived in the city.
Right.
But I would buy all my CDs and tapes, if not in the city, in Brooklyn or in Queens Boulevard. And I'd have that half an hour bus ride home. And I'd just be
yeah.
staring at that CD.
I'd open it up right away and I would just read everything
yeah,
there.
Yeah, just
because
look through all the
back
pictures.
Back then, too, you know, record labels would give you 6 to 10 or 12 like gatefold sleeve. It would just
yep.
open up and up.
Or
and
it would
up,
be a
up.
Book. It'd be a 16-page
yeah.
book.
And then, like, there's album art and there's all kinds of other
yep.
stuff.
Right.
Like, they don't...
Which is what's great about vinyl, too,
yeah.
because you have the size was, of
yeah.
that vinyl and that artwork, and you could see the detail more. You know, if you're looking at Sgt. Pepper's,
yeah.
identifying yeah. people, it's a lot harder to do that
on yeah,
a
CD
cassette tape or a CD.
4x5 or whatever.
Or
right.
on an iTunes thumbnail, for that matter.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, there is something... There is something
There's something
lost
gained
about.
And lost.
Yeah,
digital,
but I think there
technology.
Always is. I'm sure when people saw the cars
Any
go by, they were like, I remember the yeah. smell of a horse.
Yeah, the guy
I missed that smell of that horse.
The smooth yeah. ride of a horse.
The guy who invented the horse and buggy was pretty pissed when the car came off.
Yeah.
yeah.
There was a quote in some movie that was really...
But then, of course, the smell of the car. And
yeah, yeah. yeah. And, well, and you know, yeah. when there's people that hate hybrids now because they don't smell the same. Or I think whatever you fall in love with at a certain age,
Nostalgia.
Yeah, you're stuck to. Chris Rock once said, your favorite music is the first music you got laid to. And I think, you know, it...
It can be.
I'm going to date myself, but man, I love grunge.
Yeah.
I love it. Just put it on at any time. And I'm like, it doesn't feel like it's 20 years. Never mind for me.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, damn. For me, it's... I mean, metal has always been my... I was 9 years old when I heard... Or 10 years old when I heard Power Slave by Iron Maiden for the first time.
Yeah.
Became obsessed. You know, so metal is always my roots. And they've... Even when I've kind of branched away in all sorts of different music, whether it's avant-garde, classical, or rock, or this, or that, or the other thing, free jazz, you know, whatever, more experimental music, that metal has never left.
Yeah.
You know, which... So much so that while I was at NAMM, and I've veered away from metal for... God, 10 years, you know, once new metal came out, it's like, oh, you know, first couple of years, like, oh, this isn't too bad. There's some of it. The breakdowns were really cool, you know, dynamics, and there'd be this big build.
Cookie Monster vocals. Like, oh, this and the
well, I love Cookie Monster vocals. Depends on the Cookie Monster.
I could take one song of Cookie Monster vocals. Oh, if it's actually Cookie Monster.
I'm good at Cookie Monster vocals.
I will listen to Cookie I would listen to Cookie Monster for hours.
Yeah.
But you know, it's guys pretending be, yes.
Yeah. With his dulcet tones.
I could just listen to him recite the alphabet.
Yeah.
Which is basically what he does every day.
Yeah, Sesame Street.
I got
That's what he does. That's his gig.
That's his job. That and destroy the cookie jars.
Yep. Yep. I once wrote a piece for McSweeney's that never got picked up called Cookie Monster Breaks Up With His Mistress. And he tells her,
eating the cookie a little too hard.
I wrote it because...
A little too intensely.
No, first of all, I wrote it because I just had the opening line, it not you, it me. and I enjoyed that enough to keep writing.
Right,
but there was a moment where he says he's worried that if he gets caught in an affair, he'll be fired from children's television.
Of course.
And he says, "Me have no skills. All me do is eat cookies and read alphabet."
At least he can do that. At that point, he's overqualified to work at the comic book store.
You're saying you can't eat cookies?
You can. That's what I'm saying. He knows his alphabet. He's overqualified. We worked at a store in Oak Lawn, and we had a back issue.
Was it the one on 95th Street?
Yeah, 10th Planet.
By Rossi Music?
Yep. And we had a guy we hired at one point. I'm not going to say the guy's name to spare him the embarrassment. But we said, hey, you got to go alphabetize these back issues. And he was taking, like, this is a 10-minute job, and it was, like, an hour had gone by. And I walked over there, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he's got a post-it note with the alphabet written out on it. He had a cheat sheet fucking alphabet. So it's like, if you know the alphabet, you're kind of overqualified.
Yeah,
if
you almost have to wonder, like, how does that happen?
He was a teenager in high school.
Yeah, how does he get to high school?
Well, that's
a great question,
the educational
John.
System. No, I mean, there's been so much.
Behind.
Yeah.
That child was left
when,
behind.
When was this?
This was like 2000 and...
Because you used to hear, even in the 80s, you used to hear about that stuff all the time, 90s, you know, just advancing students. Because, the teachers don't want to look bad. Well, he can't read. Fuck it, pass him.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, send him through.
They just kept lowering the pass.
Because there were plenty
grade,
of adults. Yeah, which is what they're doing. They're just, you know, I mean, it hasn't really stopped. Depending on the school you go to.
The alphabet, just try saying the alphabet in your head. It's like, you know, it's like the song. We all learn that song.
So obviously not all of us.
It's not hard.
Some people.
I would love it if you were trying to explain to this guy and you just went, but there's a song.
There's a song for it.
It's Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. You already know that
I have
song.
A theory, though. I mean, you know, some people are tone deaf. Maybe he just couldn't get it.
Maybe he couldn't sing.
He couldn't sing.
He can't.
I can barely carry a note in a bucket, but, you know, maybe.
But you're playing 10 strings and 30 frets.
12 strings.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. So this week we're going to do something different. We're going to have Matt play the Chapmastick. We've been talking about it for about an hour. I think we've described it fairly well, but every time he plays it, I'm blown away. And
it's
feel
pretty
like,
awesome.
Like I can barely play 6 strings in the way he's playing 10 and
12.
12?
12.
There's 2 more strings than I even thought there were.
Yep.
6 guitar.
So we bass. Might your amp not with a Kemper.
Thanks for rubbing it in, Jack.
Well, I don't own one. But we basically just mic'd up a little Roland Microcube, and Matt's been sitting with the stick in his lap. So we thought instead of, you know, the same recommendations that, you know, we kind of have every week, like read Spider-Man. we just let you play because I can't
listen to this instead.
Yeah, I can't think of anything cool in this. What do you want to play?
You could also do recommendations over my music, you know, just sort of like a theme song out or something.
Well, as soon as we're as soon as we're bored with it, we'll just start talking.
Oh.
Well, that's cold.
Ouch.
Why don't you play one thing and then we'll talk a little more. We'll give the plug. You can play over the plugs at the end.
Sure. Well, this is an original song called Pavlov. Mm-hmm. It's sort of my hit single, if you will.
Do you
it's about 7 minutes.
Do you have recordings? Do you have a CD or anything online? I'm
working on, there'll be three recordings I'm looking to put out this year. Very soon, actually next month, my drummer, Paul Schlacht, and I are going to play at Reggie's opening up for a band called K.O. Dot. And we're furiously writing music, so we'll have sort of a three-song demo, which will later in the summer, it'll be prepared for that in March, end of March. And so later in the summer, we hope to have a record finished. And then I'm also working on a solo stick record. And then I want to get an EP written, 3-4 songs, hopefully, with, they've already agreed to play on it. So I just need to get the music together with Tony Levin, the legendary stick bass player from Peter Gabriel, King Crimson, David Bowie, Pink Floyd, blah, blah, blah. John Lennon.
Yeah.
He played with Stravinsky when he was a kid in the child orchestra at Kennedy's White House in 63. Unbelievable. But, and then also Pat Mastalato, who you might know from Mr. Mister as a drummer. Kyrie Eleison, anyone? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go.
Take these broken wings.
And I love it every time Steven figures out what we're going on.
It's like, wait for it. There it is.
It's like before, you just...
gotcha, bitch!
Completely clapping. You went, oh, David Boy! Right. He's in Labyrinth!
That's and Basquiat.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he was in that too. Anyways... Yes, and Pat Mastalato. Also,
I thought Basquiat was going to be on the CD with you.
He was Warhol. No. I would have had him, except he's a visual dead. Artist, and he's dead.
Yeah.
He's gone. Guy. He's gone. Hey, well, I'm coming back anytime soon. He's gone. Yeah, you won't see him again. Maybe later, if there's a heaven. I don't know. I doubt it. He's fucking gone. I digress. So, yeah, so Pat Mastalato, continuity grenade.
Right,
Pat Mastalato, again, has also played on the Friends theme song in the Rembrandts.
Oh, cool.
The drums. I'll be there for you, you know.
Yeah.
This is why I don't sing. Fucking garbage. So, okay, yeah, that's why I keep my mouth shut usually and play the Chapman stick.
Well, this is Pavlov.
This is Pavlov. So I'll just save the intro. We'll do a little intro. We'll do a little. This is Pavlov. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. right, here's the big crescendo.
Woo! That's awesome.
Shit. What are you going to do?
My favorite part was the cursing. You can follow us at Not In My Book on Twitter. That is the Caffeinated Comics handle. Like us on Facebook. Tell people. Tell everyone you know that you like it. I've heard nothing but positive things back from the podcast. So the things you're telling us, tell other people. Matt, how can we find you?
MattTateMusic.com. MattTate Music.com. I'm on Twitter, Facebook. That'll take you to my SoundCloud, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Whatever else is there. There's other things.
All other things.
It's Instagram. There's new things. Technologies coming out all the time.
That's David.
19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Thank you so much. That was awesome.
And what is that?
That's a store.
Chimera's Comics?
Chimera's Comics.
Chimera's Comics.
I knew that. I just wanted to make sure everyone in the podcast
knew that.
Make sure
it gets plugged. I think Dave says it at the end of the show. Doesn't he? Does he plug it in at the end? Like a recording of Dave. He's like,
no. Sometimes you don't want to leave it to Dave.
This is what Dave says.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.